My name is Lyle Nelson. My name is Leslie Nielsen.
Deep breath.
My name is Liam Neeson, and I feel like I want to sing. I feel a bit nervous about sitting here, but my old pal Conan O'Brien.
You should be nervous.
I'm very excited.
You should be nervous, Liam, because you know me. I've got a temper. It's going to get rough for you. You know that, don't you?
You'll come for me. You'll find me.
I'll.
Fall is here. Hear the yell. Back to school. Ring the bell. Brand new shoes. Walking blues. Climb the fence. Books and pens. I can tell that we are going to be friends.
Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Hey there. Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Joined as always by my good pals,
yeah.
Sonam Obsession, my assistant now for how many years?
14 and like a half.
Okay.
14 and a half
years. And for how many of those years do you think you really tried? Be honest.
You want me to be honest?
Yeah.
2.
Okay. And of course, Matt Gorley, you always give 100%.
Oh,
what?
Of what you're capable of.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
About 10% of most people.
Yes, yeah. You give 100% of the 10% that you're able to give.
What's your name again?
My name's Cronin.
Okay.
It's nice to be here all together, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Do you like it? Do you like coming in to see me? And
I'm not going to lie. It's nice to like just kind of get away, drive here.
Well, you live in a madhouse, I think it's fair to say.
Why would you?
No, I'm not putting you down. I'm
you're
just saying.
Right. No, it
I
is
think
a madhouse.
Any mom who has twin 2-year-old boys who have figured out how to make weapons would probably say that it's nice to come into a podcast studio.
It absolutely is.
Does
no, I know
it hurt to come into 2 other assholes, though?
It does feel like I'm going, well, are you saying my children
no,
are
that
assholes?
Came out
wait,
wrong.
You just
that
said other assholes.
That came out wrong.
Her kids are not assholes.
No, they're not. Don't you play all sanctimonious
with me. No, I'm sorry, but that's not cool.
No,
yeah.
You're right. I apologize.
I am going from 2 toddlers to 2 other kind of
that's
toddlers.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
2 toddlers. To 2 asshole toddlers is what I meant.
And so how's your little shithead? I'm sorry. I thought we were into putting people down people's
she
children.
She is. She's in really into something called pissy water, which is just seltzer water, which she tries to call spicy water, but comes out pissy wawa.
Oh.
So she all day is going, baby pissy wawa? Baby pissy wawa?
Right.
Huh. Yeah.
Child Services is going to hear that. And they're going to think she has to drink her urine.
Well,
that there's some kind of weird stuff going on at your house.
They say it's good for you.
Yeah.
I don't think it is.
Pissy water?
No. Urine.
No. You lost the track.
I know. No, that's. I thought that I was saying pissy water like Glenn says it, but you meant piss is good for you. I'm not going to drink my piss.
You're not? Let's all drink our piss right now.
Sure. Okay. Just did. No. And, it's fine. It's a good thing it's a podcast and there's no video. Oh, there's video on YouTube or wherever you enjoy your videos. See what I did there?
What do you mean? Room for.
Just in case they invent another format, I just make sure that I always cover my bases.
Okay.
I'm very smart
that
way.
They invent another, there are other
formats. I was saying stuff like this on the TV show back in the 90s.
Huh.
I was saying, well, I hope you enjoy this either tonight or when you see it in a rerun or someday when they invent the internet.
Hmm.
I remember
you
saying,
said this.
I said that in 94.
No.
Okay.
There's actual tape of it that was then destroyed.
Sometimes I feel like you don't even know that the internet exists now.
Yeah. I'm told it's amazing.
It's not.
Sure, it's got its pluses and minuses.
It's okay.
No, I'm very happy. I like coming in here because no one wants to see me around my house.
Oh,
they're quite happy for me to leave. Oh, yeah.
What do they do when you're gone, do you think?
I hear a lot of... It's funny. I hear a Mexican band playing the minute I leave. Brass section. And it's weird because there's no band there. But the minute I leave and then I see catering trucks pulling up and I see lots of guests showing up and everyone looks excited.
It's that song where the Ewoks play when they beat the Death Star. Just that whole ta-da-da-da-da.
Hey, I have a question for you that you can answer.
Is this Star Wars related?
Yes.
Open for business.
It's about what you just brought up.
Okay.
Which is, I remembered showing my son those movies.
Yeah.
And he was, enthralled. And I showed them to him when he was a little boy. He was like, I don't know, maybe he was 6 or 7. And I showed him those movies. And it was a big deal. Then we got to the one where I remembered the Ewoks doing a dance and singing a song called like Jub Jub or something or Glub Glub.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, oh, wait till you see this uh-huh. part. Man, I said, this part, I remembered seeing this in a theater. And this is a little rough, but take a look. And we got to that part and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
What happened? Did they edit it out?
In 1997, Lucas released special editions of all three original films, and they added CG, and then in Jedi, they took out the song that they sing written by John Williams' son, which is like a disco song called Loptinek, and they replaced it with like a blues song, and then they took out that Ewok celebration song and just put in this somber,
yes,
almost like funeral dirge music.
Right, so I looked like a fool because I told my son, check this out, yeah, it's really hilarious because it doesn't quite work. Where do you see this? And then it didn't happen. What was the song? How did it go?
Icha, kunka cha chicha, a kum kum chi chi chi, a liti e o wa, ya chi pa chi tu, ra cha, ri chi fa chi fu, yaf nub, ali uti la, pa 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 pa. And then, of course, they've got the curtain call with old Darth Vader there dead, but then they switched it with young Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You want me to keep going on, or are you about to say something?
Can you?
No, no. I was just remembering. I have to go have a heart surgery. So I have to leave now. And we're going to have to cut this. Did I tell you that I'm having a quadruple bypass today?
No, you didn't.
Yeah,
but
just
I haven't
switched
even
my
gotten
mind
to the job as policy.
No, no, no. I'm also having both eyes removed. And that's a whole other thing that's happening. Okay. Yeah, they're just gonna
can you watch OG Star Wars somewhere?
Yeah, my house.
That's
but
not your house?
I can come over.
Does Lucas also,
it's okay.
Does he have a hit squad out trying to find people like you who can sing the song and kill you? Because he probably wants it all erased from people's minds, too.
I don't think he cares anymore because he sold the whole thing. I think he's just
been
too wounded
cares
by it.
No, he still cares.
Well, good question. I don't know, but I've got those despecialized editions, they're called, and high def. If the two of you want to come over, we could have a slumber party. We could giggle. We could tickle each other.
You know, or we can borrow them. We can borrow them.
Yeah, or yeah. I could say I'm going to come by and borrow them, and just if you don't hear from me, it means I'm coming soon.
No, no, no. These are not physical media. These are digital. They're on a drive, so we have to watch them at my house.
I'll
I have
borrow
to come
the whole
maybe
well,
next year's Chill
over?
Chum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
we do a 9-hour
I can't
day
go
where
to.
We watch all three movies.
I can't that's be there. Right, I'm having my entire pelvis removed next year, so there won't be a Chill Chums next
yeah
year. Yeah, it's being replaced with just an old wicker basket.
Yeah, and I got to drive him.
You got to drive me.
I got to drive you.
And you
got to
drive
that's
me
cool
home,
I'll
too.
Come
and
along.
And no speed bumps, because I'll have no ass on the
no
way home.
No, I'll come along, and we'll get those little DVD players for the back of headrest.
You're massive ass now.
All right, take it easy.
Yeah.
It's been said I don't have much of an ass. Pretty much a
it's a 2-minute surgery.
Okay. All right.
Hallelujah.
Okay. Okay. That's nice, Sona. I don't think people have to know just how bad it is back there.
You don't think people have to? You've been on television for like 30 years.
I know, but usually my ass was covered, or if the monologue, the ass was facing the other way, and then the desk.
You wore jeggings on one episode of the show, so,
right,
you know.
But I put stuff back there. I put two irons that you iron clothes with back there. I had these two bulbous triangles. Would you shut the fuck
what
up?
What?
You're out of control. What? You're out what of control. I let you sing the whole Jub Jub Glub Glub song.
You got the words wrong.
I think I got them right. I'm going to... This has to stop. This has to stop now. What we took away from this episode
yeah
is that...
By episode, you mean mental episode.
The episode I just had
yeah
where you sang the Glub Glub Jub Jub song, then Sona went on this just crazy take that I have a flat ass, which is just not true.
Super hot take, yeah.
And super hot ass.
Thank you.
Big what daddy.
Come on, man.
What? I like an ass
that's
that you can
weird
hose down and that no water stays on it. It just immediately.
Incredible.
You know?
All right.
It's
well,
like
you
a
know
board.
What?
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
It splashes back.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you muttering?
I'm singing the Jabba's Palace song, the original one that they took out.
Oh,
no,
good,
no, no, no.
Good. I really that's wanted good to hear it.
Did you?
Yeah.
You know what? I have to move on because we have an amazing guest today.
I think they can hang on.
Wait
they
a minute. Wait. Our guest has a Star Wars connection.
That's right.
Yes.
Qui-Gon Jinn, green lightsaber.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, yeah. We were all going to just about to say that. And then I remembered that I was educated. All right, here we go. My guest today has started... Would you take it easy? My guest today has starred in such movies as, look at this, Schindler's List, Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
I'd switch those.
And now you can see him in the new action thriller, Retribution. Thrilled he's here today. Liam Neeson, welcome. What what skills do you have in real life, by the way? It's one of the most famous lines in action movies. I've got a particular set of skills. What skills do you have in real life?
I would love to be able to say I have a skill at fly fishing.
Mm-hmm.
I've been flying fishing for 23, 24 years.
Yeah.
And I'm competent.
That's not as threatening to say to a kidnapper over the phone. Now listen to me. I don't have any money if that's what you're after. But I am a competent fly fisherman.
Catch and release. But you, I will not release.
Come on, remake it that way. I promise you, people are going to absolutely love it. You know, it is great to see you.
We've
run into each other a couple of times over the years. We've talked, and we always have this crazy bond. I don't know if it's a genetic thing because I don't know. I found out since I met you that I'm 100% Irish. After my people have been in this country since 1875, still genetically. We just married each other and had more kids. Sure. And
1870, you know, sorry, Colin, the history of the planet.
Yeah.
1875 was a nanosecond ago.
Yeah, just happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do think, I don't know what it is, but I know first time I met you, you may not remember this. I've only been to one prize fight in my life, one boxing match. And you, someone took me, I'd never been to one before. And I stood up and you came over and said, oh, hello, Conan, let's go get a pint, because it was in between bouts. And I thought, oh, this is fantastic. Liam Neeson is inviting me for a pint. And
what was the main event?
This is how bad I am. I don't remember. I remember people were hitting each other. That's how, I don't follow the sport. Someone invited me.
Right.
And I thought, these guys seem angry. No, they're supposed to be doing this. We're supposed to be hitting each other. I don't remember what it was, but we went and we got a pint together, and I thought, this is living, having a pint with Liam Neeson. This is about as cool as it gets. And it was a great time. You were very nice to me, and then we've run into each other every now and then. I know my people are all from the South.
Yes.
By the coast, and I know that you're a northern fella.
Northern Ireland, a little town called Ballymena.
Yeah.
30 miles northwest of Belfast. But my mother is was born and bred Waterford in the Irish Republic.
Waterford by the sea?
Yes.
That's where my people are from.
Get away.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. I will not get away. I am here to stay. We are from Waterford and on my father's side.
Yes.
So you and I are related. We know that.
We have to be.
Yeah. And I remembered first time I went back to Ireland, I stopped somewhere that I was told was Waterford, and I get out of the car, and you know, they say you're supposed to kiss the ground. So I thought, okay, I'll kiss the ground. And as I'm kissing the ground, someone went by and said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm from Waterford. They went, this isn't Waterford. spitting out soil. They said, it's, you know, 30 miles that way, you ass. But it's funny because there's something in the blood where when I meet other people who are Irish, even though I've not grown up in that country, and you could say I'm not really Irish because I'm, you know, third generation or fourth generation in this country, I do right away.
Yeah.
Like every cell in my body says, this is the air I'm supposed to be breathing.
Sure.
I like that it's raining out.
Yes.
Yes, everyone's depressed.
Yes.
People aren't taking care of themselves. This is the way I'm meant to live, not in Southern California, which is a terrible, terrible mistake. Yeah.
But I find, Conan, I'm born and bred Palomina, Catholic.
Oh, boy.
Because everybody always asks.
Yeah.
But when I came out to the States, 1988, I'm an American citizen, very proud one too, and Irish citizen. But everybody I'd meet wanted to tell me they had a connection with either Ireland or Scotland.
Yeah.
I was dying for someone to say, I'm an American.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They always wanted to make a connection.
Yeah.
It made me think, there was 1.5 million during the potato famine in Ireland.
Sure.
1845, 1852. Came out here.
Right.
In coffin boats, they were known as, coffin ships, you know. And I was like, of course. 1845. That was a nanosecond ago. You know, 2 seconds ago.
I've always got embarrassed on St. Patrick's Day here in the States because people that were 1/18th Irish paint the Irish flag on their face, get shit-faced, throw up on Fifth Avenue, and kiss everyone they see after throwing up. I'm Irish. How Irish are you? My father's, uncle's, brother's, sister's, mother's. Because your last name's Armenian. Fuck you. I'm Irish. And I think, well, you just wanted to get drunk. And then I find out that in Ireland on St. Patrick's Day, people go to mass.
They go to mass. Yeah.
No one's painting their face.
Like, I know.
No one's celebrating this insanity. So you're raised Catholic. So we both had that because I was raised very Catholic. And did you do...
Were you an altar boy?
I was not an altar boy. They found out early on this kid can read... And he's good at speaking, so we'll make him a lectern, which means I'll read the passages when they need someone to read a passage.
Okay.
So I got a speaking part, which was kind of nice. I looked at the altar boys, and I thought, I like that outfit. I want that smoky thing. I want to toss that smoky thing around.
That's terrible, Connor.
I'm sorry. Here in America.
Being an ex-altar boy.
And here in America, we call it the smoky thing. And if you're going to be a citizen of this country, you need to learn that. Communion, the whole thing. I found communion confession. I found confession terrifying. Oh, I would always freeze up when I would go into the confessional because I wouldn't know. I didn't want to admit to anything real, and I would freeze up. So I'd make things up that no kid would do. I said, I embezzled a check. You embezzled from put funds in an offshore account and didn't declare it. How old are you? I'm 7. I coveted my neighbor's wife. What? Did you? Not really. I just would freeze up. Did you find that frightening?
I did, especially the last confession I ever went to, officially confessional. And I think it was... I wasn't 16. I was 15. I was still boxing. And it was a great event when you had a missionary visiting from Africa or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd be there for a week and you'd go to mass every night. And I, as an older boy, I'd be serving mass to hear your confession from him. It was like a big deal. Mm-hmm. So I remember going, 15 years of age, and it was before mass, and there were lots of old women just outside the confessional, kneeling down, saying their prayers. And I went into this guy, and he's used to being in Africa, Congo, wherever, shouting his lungs out and stuff. So we started, and I had learned how to pleasure myself at home under the sheets, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I looked up the appropriate word. I remember this about masturbation. Okay, that seems harmless enough, I'll say that. Bless me, Father, argued with my mom, my sister and I got into a fight, and I masturbated. You what? This guy literally...
Oh, my God.
I mean, he almost said things like, the grass will grow out of the palm of your hand before you're 21. Stop that evil practice. He's shouting this. And I'm immediately thinking, I have to leave this, and there's all these old women praying outside.
Who can hear everything.
Who can hear everything, especially him. And I left, and my dick was that size.
It just shrinks up inside you, yeah.
And that was the last time I ever went to get
I think that'll do it. Yeah. I think that'll do it.
Oh, that's... my God. I wasn't happy. And I'm all proud of myself. I haven't learned this word, you know?
Well, I'm glad I never masturbated. That's all I'll say. It's so, that's so funny that the things that terrify you as a kid, and there's so much about church, especially Catholic church, that's scary. I remembered once I went up and, the priest went to put the communion in my mouth and it hit the side of my mouth and it fell. And it fell on the ground, which is, it's supposed to, through transubstantiation, it's become the body and blood of Christ. This is the actual, body of Christ that has now fallen on the rug. And I panic, and I just pretend that I got the wafer when I didn't. So I close my mouth, and I turn, and I walk about halfway down, and the priest says, "Get back here!" in front of everybody. And I turned around, and I had to walk back up and pick up this wafer off the floor.
You picked it up.
I picked
it
up.
Not him.
Yeah, I picked it up. Yeah.
Okay.
And my hand caught fire. It burned my hand with the wrath of God, right. And I chewed it down. But my God, again, some of the scariest moments of my life happened in the Catholic Church growing up.
Because the wafer, you're not supposed to touch it with your teeth. It's right. The body and blood of Christ.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, this isn't fair. Like when it fell, I'm imagining the scene in slow motion as it hits the ground. You hear, oh.
I heard Jesus as if he had thrown his lower back out. God, he can't say Jesus because he's Jesus. Me.
Oh, but I'm surprised the priest didn't pick it up.
I don't think he could see. He was very old. Right. And I think he just was, you know, I think you are more learned in the ways of the Catholic religion than he was. I think he had just quit his job at the gas station. But it's funny because I know that you did a Simpsons episode. I used to write for The Simpsons in another lifetime. Yeah. And I know that your Simpsons episode, which is a very funny idea, which is, I think that you are, I believe you convert Bart and Homer to Catholicism.
Yeah, Homer,
which is the most ridiculous.
Yeah, Homer loves Catholicism because he can fast and get rid of all the sins and start over again.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite things about writing for that character, and I think all the other Simpsons writers would agree with me, is that Homer is an immediate enthusiast for anything, which is great when you're writing for someone because it doesn't matter what the story is, he can decide, this is it. And he decides that at the beginning of almost every episode. Yes. And the idea that it's now Catholicism really cracks me up.
Yeah.
That's a very funny idea. I don't know who wrote it, but God bless him.
It was a funny episode, too.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Tell me if this was a dream job or not. I know that as a young man, obviously before you had made it, you worked at the Guinness plant.
There was a Guinness bottling plant in my hometown whereby the Guinness would be brought up in these huge tankers from the Guinness breweries in Dublin to our establishment where the Guinness would be bottled. Mm-hmm. And the Guinness would then come down in crates, 24 bottles, per crate. And to be stacked on pallets. I drove a forklift truck, so once the pallets were filled, I would go in, lift the pallet of Guinness, and it would be stored at 54 degrees Fahrenheit for 10 days.
Yeah.
And then it would be distributed to various pubs and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was a great job. I loved it.
You just hear about, well, the forklift sounds fun, but also working in a Guinness factory just sounds like Willy Wonka. You know, it sounds like it's the Irish version of Willy Wonka, but Willy Wonka just makes one kind of beer, but all the kids get to drink it.
Yeah.
It is funny. I always laugh when I'm back in Ireland and I see lots of advertisements for Guinness, and I think you don't need to advertise it. Why are there ads everywhere? Hey, have you tried Guinness? Would you like some? You should try it. We know. It's the touchstone of this whole country is Guinness.
There used to be an ad. I don't know if you would have got it here. I'm talking late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And the ad for Guinness, program's on, go to a commercial break. And the screen would just go black. And it would stay black. And you'd be wanting to go over and bang the side of the television. Mm-hmm. And as you're about to do that, you suddenly start to see these little bubbles. So what it was pint of Guinness, the camera slowly moving up to reveal the white head.
Yeah.
That was the ad.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
That was it.
They did show that.
This 30 seconds of blackness was brought to you by Guinness. That was it.
Incredible.
Yeah.
It's funny because I know that for years, I don't think they do anymore, but they said, it's fine. Even if you're pregnant, it's good for the baby.
Sure.
It's good for the breast milk. Sure. If you've, you know. Yeah.
Iron, full of iron.
Yeah.
Yeah, my first son was born in Hollis Street, a very famous maternity hospital in Dublin. And my wife got delivered with, she gave birth to our son, Michael. But she was very, very anemic. We didn't realize this.
Mm-hmm.
And she needed something like 12 units of blood. And I was about to start shooting Michael Collins. I had cycled back home once the baby was born and all that, everything was okay. And suddenly there was this emergency. These 5-6 nurses apparently came in, and my wife's saying, call my husband, please call my husband. And they're going, ah, it's all right, don't worry, it's all right. Mm-hmm. And it was all right.
Yeah.
And but they started giving her a bottle of Guinness every day.
I'm picturing it hanging up like an IV.
No.
That's what they do in Ireland. Don't worry. Yes, anybody, they bring them in. Motorcycle accident. They put a thing of Guinness up, run an IV into your arm.
I'll be all right.
Just a scratch.
Off your head.
Massive internal damage. Give him some Guinness. He's all right now. You know, we were talking just before we got started about there was an event we did because you have this great Spielberg association, you know, because you were in played Oscar Schindler in Schindler's List. And
who?
Oscar Schindler. You don't remember? God, you've had too much Guinness. It was this is a big moment in your career. You should remember this, Leo.
Oh, that black and white movie. Yes.
Yeah. He couldn't afford color film.
Yes.
It was a weird time for him to cheap out on such an important movie. No, such a beautiful, such a fantastic movie. And you were so brilliant in that role. And I know that you and I got invited to this big Spielberg event, and they sat us next to each other.
Yeah.
You know, someone thought, oh, we'll put Neeson next to O'Brien.
Put the
Irish together. But it was a pretty heavy table we were at, because I was the MC for the event. You were speaking at the event. I think Springsteen was. So at our table was Bruce Springsteen, Patty, myself, because I'm the MC. That's how I got in.
Yeah.
You're there, of course. Steven Spielberg, President Barack Obama comes and sits at the table.
Yeah.
And you and I, I'll never forget, we're sitting next to each other wondering, how the fuck did we get to this table?
I'm feeling that size.
I know. We just both naturally, everyone else at the table feels like this is the table we should be at.
Yeah.
And you and I are there. We're both 6'4", but we both shrank.
Yes.
And we both felt like it's a mistake that we're here.
I know. I still feel like that if I'm in illustrious company. I still feel that, you know?
What is that? Why do we? Because there are people who don't feel
not
that
worthy.
Way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But we don't feel, we're always feeling that way.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking that I came in through the back, that I, you know, I quickly got out of my waiter's uniform and put, you know, I never feel like I should be there.
I know. And he, Sir Anthony Hopkins, Tony Hopkins, mm-hmm. one of the great actors. I was in a film on 40 years ago, Tahiti, a remake of Mutiny on the Bounty.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Gibson, Dante Lewis, extraordinary cast. And Tony was fucking magnificent as Captain Bligh.
Yeah, you know?
Mel was Fletcher Christian. But anytime I run into Tony Hopkins, and I saw him in Rome 3 weeks ago, I was finishing a film, and Tony was in the same hotel, and went up to his room, knocked on the door, met him, and we gave each other a big hug. And it's been close to 40 years since I'd seen him. How's it going, Tony? You know what he says to me?
What?
He leans on me. He says, good, big, good lad. I haven't been found out yet.
I haven't been found out.
And he means it.
Yeah, of course he means it.
Two fucking Academy Awards.
Yeah.
I've seen him on stage. He's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
But he means it.
He means it. And I've talked about this before. There are people, I know Chris Rock used to say it to me when he'd come on the show. He'd lean over and go like, well, they haven't found me out yet. And it's just, and I think it's the people I like the most have that.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost, they're not too comfortable.
No.
They think.
And you don't want to be. I don't want to be. You know, I've made over 100 films.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think, on set, if someone's not going well, I think, go on, say something. Say fucking something, Liam. You've done 100 fucking movies. I thought, well, excuse me. Do you mind if I just say something? I think if she comes in the door first, that'll solve your camera problem. Let's try it. Okay, it works. just saying.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And also...
but I don't mean it in a...
No, I know.
I'm humble. It's like...
When I was... I know this for a fact. When I was 32 years old in New York City, I was with my girlfriend at the time and looking at a menu, and they had a meal that was they had an entree that was just perfect, had all these different ingredients, but it had some black olives in it, and I don't like black olives. And she said, well, you'll love that. And I said, no, it's got black olives. I won't order that. And she said, just tell them, can you just leave the olives off? And I said, I can't do that. 33. And she said, yeah, you can. And I said, she'll hate me.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
She doesn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me that long to try and figure out that you're allowed to say some things. Yeah. You're allowed to. Now I'm a total prick when I go to a restaurant.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. The word's out on me. You, I want this pasta with no pasta.
Shaken, not stirred. It's like... I would take it further than that. When my wife and I used to go out and eat, and Natasha was a fantastic cook. Yeah. I mean, chef. I would call her chef. She'd say, no, I'm a cook. But if something wasn't cooked to her approval, you know, it didn't matter what it was. And she rarely did this, but it happened a few times. Say, no, I'm sorry. The meats, I want it a little bit more. I'm going, Tash, please. They're going to spit on it and bring it back out, please. Because I really believe that would happen.
Yeah.
No matter what the restaurant was,
Someone's
going to spit in it because you returned it, you know. You've upset the flow in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure, yeah. I do remember speaking to you shortly after, not too long after she passed, and you were going through a really tough time.
Yeah.
And not to bring that back up, but I'm glad.
That's all right. We still talk, she and I, every day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's been many years, but
14,
how many kids do you have?
Two boys, nearly 27 and nearly 28.
Are they big?
Irish twins.
Are they big fellas like you?
Yeah, they're about 6'1".
Yeah. Tiny Irishman, we call them.
Under threat of death. I said, you grow taller than me, you're dead.
You're dead to me. You know, it's funny. My son started to get very tall, and he said, I don't want to be your height. And I said, you don't? And he said, no, you're too tall. It's weird. And I said, what the fuck? He was just, you know, no, I don't want to be your height. He said, I'd like to be like, you know, maybe 6'1", 6'2". I don't want to be 6'4". It's weird. And he sort of implied like I should be in the circus. I was like, you know, that's no way to talk to your father.
Yes.
But that's the way he, you know, that's our relationship.
What age is he?
He is 17 years old.
Okay.
And he might be done growing. He's just a tiny bit shorter than me. And I think he's happy about that.
I know.
But he's stronger than me. It doesn't go well when we fight.
I know. That's not good. Chase me, Dad. That's what got me. They turn 12 or 13, chase me, Dad, and you go after them.
Yeah.
There's no way can you catch them.
No.
I remember that day very well.
Yeah.
And I keep reasonably fit, you know. Like,
I'll get you. When you come back, you'll come back eventually, and then I'll get you. Yeah, I just throw things now, and I'm not going to chase them anymore. I just throw some rocks. Do you get, because you have staked out so many areas, you've done so much great work, but you've also been... Once you're in a Star Wars film, you're part of that whole lore. Do you have Star Wars fans coming up to you all the time?
Not all the time. It is a cult.
It is, yeah.
There's so many movies and spin-offs now, I think. No, you're diluting the whole thing, I think. That's my personal thing. But yeah, occasionally, you know, you'll say, oh, this kid's after a Star Wars autograph and I don't want to give autographs and we're in an airport. Oh, it's not the kid. It's the grandfather. There he is. Or the dad, you know, horn-rimmed glasses and a beard.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, they become 11-year-olds.
Did you enjoy, because I know that you and Ewan McGregor got to use the lightsabers. Did you have fun with those?
We did. The first time we actually had to pull the lightsaber, and it's only a handle.
Right, it's a handle, and they add the effect later.
Yeah, and maybe a little bit of... aluminum tube with green tape. Mine was green because I'm Irish Jedi. And Ewan's was red or something.
Yeah.
So the first time we got to pull them to start a little fight, you know, we both automatically went, and action.
Wait, you were doing that with your mouth?
I know. And George said, let's cut there. Boys, we can add that in later. Yeah, of course, we knew that. Twat.
That's that's hilarious. I wish they had left that in. Wouldn't that be so great? You two just spitting at each other. God, that would be so, so funny looking. That would be fantastic.
I had this lovely makeup and hair lady and Scottish. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to be doing a scene with this little flying sort of monster that was this kid that would eventually be Darth Vader. He's 9 years of age.
Sure.
And it was a big, long scene with this flying thing. What do you want? That's all this sort of stuff. And I didn't know what this thing was going to look like. So I'm acting to a guy with a stick and an orange or a green tennis ball stuck in the top that's right. going to be right. eventually this flying little monster. You know?
Right.
So I'm in the makeup, so I got my wig on, my beard and all that stuff. And she says, oh, Liam, makeup lady says, I did see, a mock-up of the wee monster. You could be a monkey smoking a pipe. No one's going to be looking at you.
Isn't that nice to hear just before you go
out?
I know,
before you do. And I had a lot of lines to say on this thing, to this tennis ball, And right enough, you see the scene, it's like, oh, wow, that's amazing. What are you doing here, Jedi?
I'll show you. You idiots. You don't need to make the sound with your mouth. It's incredible to me that you've had a very distinguished career. You've done a lot of great work. You're a terrific actor. And then this is the way it goes. Eventually, in this business, you are acting to a green tennis ball.
Yeah.
And because that's more and more, that's what the work is. And I don't know about you, but there are so many times, particularly in my profession, my career, my weird corner of it, where I find myself doing these things over the years, over the many years. And I think, I step outside my body and go, what the hell are you doing? You're a complete fool. You're an ass. What is it? You're a total ass. But I think we're in show business, ultimately.
Yeah, sure.
So even something as, important and popular as a Star Wars film, you're there and there's a tennis ball.
Yeah.
And there must be some part of you that steps outside of you and went, I did theater.
I know. Yeah, there's that. But what you've done, Conan, to me, that would be a nightmare for me. Getting up as Conan O'Brien or Liam Neeson in front of an audience and having to entertain them. That's a nightmare. The thought of it. I'm not a comedian, right? I mean, you are. You've done this stuff. It's like, fuck, how did they do that?
Well, the trick is sometimes it's not good. That's what I've always said. Yeah. The trick is you go out and you try, but I know that I love it. I love being in front of people, and I really enjoy it, but I get very intense before I go out and do it. Right. And I was telling you just before I went on, just last night, I did something with Paul McCartney, about 800 people, I think, in the crowd, and had the time of my life out there on stage, but beforehand, waiting backstage, standing next to that guy, and I had to go out first and get the crowd going and then bring him out.
Right.
Things get very focused in my brain. And I still, after all these years, I get kind of intense because I think you have to get that way before you go out.
Yeah.
If you just breeze on out there, it's not going to be any good.
Yeah, I remember, just apropos of what we're talking about, I remember doing a play, a Brian Friel play, new play then. It was called Aristocrats in the Belfast Theatre Festival. I'm talking 1978, something like that. And I had taken over the part from wonderful Irish actor called Stephen Ray.
Yeah.
And I'd learned the part in 2 weeks. And it was a main part, you know. We played it in Dublin for 2 weeks. Then we had a week off while the company moved up to Belfast for as part of this festival. And on the opening night of the play Aristocrats, which I had already played for 2 weeks, Brian Friel's in the audience, the director's in the audience, various Northern Ireland dignitaries. Mm-hmm. And I have a kind of drunken spiel to say in the second act. And I dried for your audience. I forgot my words. And you could have heard a pin drop. And I remember seeing at the end of the passageway, the exit sign. And I thought, if I jump off the stage now, I can be out of this horrible feeling in maybe 6 seconds. And all this is over. I didn't. But it felt like an hour had passed and I was still there looking at this exit sign and the audience looking at me. I was supposed to be drunk, the character was. So I kind of staggered off stage and the script girl, she wasn't following it at all. Anyway, when I got off stage, I remembered the line and I staggered back on again and resumed the performance.
So it came back to you?
It came back to me. But I'll never forget that moment of absolute terrifying fear.
It's funny. Have you ever figured out what happened in that moment? You obviously knew it. Was there something in that moment? Was there a reason? Was it because everyone was in the audience? Because I find sometimes I don't like to know.
Yeah.
If someone important's in the crowd,
sure.
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I'd rather not know because that gets in my head. And I used to find it difficult even when family would come and they would say like, oh, my dad's here and he's going to sit in the crowd. That would make it more difficult for me, which shouldn't make a difference at all.
No, I know.
But it would make it more difficult, even though it's a TV show, it's going out to millions of homes. That's who's really seeing it, this audience, you know, but I couldn't get past that.
Yeah, I think it is. It's partly knowing there's various people out there that you respect, you know. And I just dropped conversation. I think I felt too confident. I had taken over the part in 2 weeks, which was a fast learn for me.
Very fast, yeah.
And I think it just caught up with me. That's what it was.
I think it's refreshing. I love it when people, especially people of your caliber, say, I'm scared. And I still get scared. You know, I find that to be, it's one of the things I like most about doing the podcast and having these conversations is I think it's good for people to hear that Liam Neeson still has moments. And I, you know, we all do. We all do. We have these moments where we think, I don't know that I can do this.
Yeah, I know. Oh, well, yeah, I still get them. Not that fear, but if I'm shooting a film and, you know, there's a break and they're doing a lighting setup or something.
Right.
And I'll look at the lines or whatever and think, why do I do this?
Yeah.
And I always say to myself, you know, I think it was Robert Mitchum I saw him in some interview years ago. Says, you walk in the room, you plant your feet, speak the truth. Or walk in the room, hit the marks, say the lines. What's the problem?
Yeah.
Something like that, you know. Yeah. Something as simple as that will kind of get me back again.
It worked for Robert Mitchum, yeah. I'll say that.
And Jimmy Cagney. Cagney used to say that too. No stress, no strain. Walk in the room, plant your feet, speak the truth. That was his thing, yeah.
Well, Jimmy Cagney, he was, I grew up, I mean, it's odd, but I think just because, you know, I grew up, I came of age in the 1970s, so you'd think I'd be watching all this sophisticated stuff, but no, I watched Channel 38 or Channel 56 because they showed reruns of, and what did they show? They showed old movies. So I grew up on Jimmy Cagney, and I thought that was show business. Jimmy Cagney and Yankee Doodle Dandy, Angels with Dirty Faces, you know, Public Enemy. I just thought that's what, those were the movies I watched.
Sure.
And
me too.
Yeah, and I thought that's what it is. And of course, I wasn't watching Mean Streets. I wasn't watching. I didn't have access to those. They weren't showing those early Scorsese films. Yeah. That's what I should have been watching, but, you know, that's what was my education was the 1930s and 40s, Warner Brothers.
Yeah, me too. And we got a TV. I was in my teens, I think, when we got a TV, black and white, you know. But I always remember every Sunday there was always a movie on 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And it always seemed to be someone in a Mac with a trilby hat pouring with rain.
Yeah, film noir.
Raymond Chandler. Yeah, Alan Ladd or Mitchum or something like that, you know. So I feel I kind of grew up with those guys.
I had a question just occurred to me, which is the times that I've been in Ireland, and it surprised me the first time I encountered it, they love country music, American country music.
Huge.
And the more sentimental, the more they love it.
Yeah.
And it's a funny, because sometimes the Irish, and I'm talking North, South, Catholic, Protestant, they can come across as so hard-edged and unsentimental. But then they love the most sentimental thing in the world.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised that, you know, you look at what's on the jukebox or what's available to play in these different pubs, and it's all the most, you know, you went and left me and all I've got's my donkey, you know, kind of country. That's not a real one, but the sometimes the sappiest country songs. And it's, I don't know what that is, but then I realized, well, who wrote that music? A lot of it's Irish and Scottish.
Yeah.
You know, immigrants getting into Appalachia and they're writing this music.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, my mom used to idolize it. Hank Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, the most sentimental old claptrap, you know. She'd play it over and over and over. You know, Mom, please. Can I put on the Rolling Stones?
There'll be no Rolling Stones in this house. Is it true? I never knew if this was true or not, that you had a chance to do James Bond. Was that ever a possibility for you, or was it ever discussed?
They were interested in me after Schindler's List. They were interested in a whole bunch of other actors. Mm-hmm. Some journalists seem to think, oh, why did you turn down Bond? It's like, no, I wasn't offered James Bond. Mm-hmm. I think I was on their radar for 5 minutes.
Would you have done it if the chance had come up?
Yeah. But my wife, God love her, she said, when I first started getting a couple of calls from Barbara Broccoli mm-hmm. about, you know, would I be interested? And I said, yeah, I would be interested. And Natasha and I weren't married at the time. And she says, if you are offered James Bond, we're not getting married. And I'd be going, ding, 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 ding.
Keep it up. She did not want to be married to James Bond.
Yeah. I was worried today, darling. Oh, these boring, horribly beautiful women. I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure it is funny. After a while, anything they're paying you to do becomes a job. There's a point, I'm sure. You know, it's like, I don't care if you're the ice cream taster at the Ben and Jerry's factory. There's a day when you come home and go, like, God damn it! One more taster, fudge ripple crunch, and I'll take my life. I swear I will! And yeah, there must be days when Daniel Craig would come, oh, God damn it.
Fuck Bond.
We had to kiss and kiss and kiss. Enough! Why don't they leave me alone? I know that Retribution is the current film, the film that's coming out.
Yes.
Is this one that where you read the script and said, this is a good one? Can you tell pretty quickly when you read a script that this is?
Yeah, I have a cup of tea test. Mm-hmm. If I get to page 5, say, and I think, oh, I must make a cup of tea. That's not a good sign, you know.
Oh, okay. That's the tea test. Yeah.
That's the tea test, yeah. Yeah. But I'd work with these producers, these lovely guys, and we've done 3 movies together. And Studio Canal, I'd done 5 movies together with. And I knew it was going to be a thriller. And I'd done one for the guys on an airplane that crashes, a train that derails and crashes. I thought, yeah, a car, it's got to be a car. So this is about a car. Mm-hmm. Driving a car, I've spent 95% of the movie in a car with my 2 kids in the back.
Yeah.
The only problem is I'm trying to take them to school. I'm a financial advisor, banker. Mm-hmm. No skills.
No set of skills.
No.
Yeah.
And driving through the streets of Berlin, but unbeknownst to me, I'm sitting on a bomb, mm-hmm. as are my kids. And I have to follow these instructions from this anonymous person who has left a phone in the car. Anyway, I read the script in London. They sent it to him, and I found it a real page-turner. It was really interesting, good action-paced thing, you know.
Yeah, you know, they've always said, and it's not that I know a lot about the film business, but they've always said, if you don't have the script, you can't fake it doesn't matter what you do. You can get the greatest actors in the world, you can get the greatest director. If it's not there in the script.
Conan, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
And I can tell it's the truth because it rhymes.
Yeah.
If something rhymes, I immediately believe
it.
I immediately believe it. But I love that. You can tell by just what you call the tea test. If you want to make yourself a cup of tea, a couple of pages in, that means it's a problem.
Yeah, yeah. There's something not working.
I have a version of that called the if I'm offered test, which means if I'm offered anything, I'll do it. Because yes. Yeah. I want to go do it.
Yeah. You know the old actors one, you know, what? The agent calls mm-hmm. the actor, performer, and the actor goes, hey, John, how's it going? Yeah. What? Who? I would not work with that bitch if she was, how much? That's the classic one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the world. That's the not just show business. That's all across the board. Yeah, that's everybody. Well, I'm looking forward to it because
it's a good movie, Conan.
And I have to say, I just when I know you're in something, I'm happy. I'm serious. You're always however you're feeling inside. You're always terrific. And I wish you could teach me to talk like you. Because I'm so annoyed, as is America, by my own voice. And I've always just wished I could get it down here. Because I think Yeah, I think it's blocked my career in so many ways.
No,
yes, it has. Lee, no, it's absolutely true. Imagine me on the phone, you know, saying, I've got some skills, a special set. No one's threatened. No, there's no. Or, I'm Michael Collins. You know, I'm going to change everything here in Ireland. It's way up there. There's no authority. There's no authority.
No, I disagree with you.
Okay.
Uh-oh. But you have extraordinary energy, and I've seen you a few times. I've done your show several times.
I
love it. I really admire it. No, it's very impressive.
Yeah. Well, also annoying to people around me. We'll get my wife in here. You've met my wife. She will agree. She'll say, look, Liam, you take him for the day. I don't want him. This is, I just, you know, woke up happy today because I knew I'd be seeing you. And no, seriously, you're the real deal. And you seem like you're happy, which.
You know something? I don't believe in the word happy.
Yeah.
Content is the state.
Yes.
I aim for is contentment. That's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah.
You know? I know happiness comes and goes.
No, I agree with you. I used to tell my wife when we were just dating, I said, I believe in a low bass hum, meaning just the, you know, that low background of good feeling. Sure. So she had it made into a thing that I could wear on my wrist.
Oh, cool.
Low bass hum. But the problem is the person who made it had to, there wasn't enough space. So they shoved all the letters together. And she gave me this thing, and it says Lobasham. And people think it's like a county in Cork where I come from. And so I wear this thing, it says Lobasham. But no, I know what you're meaning. I think that there's a obsession in our culture with, are you happy all the time? It's not the natural state. But contentment is good.
Contentment's great.
Yeah.
You know, and I recently learned a word, Japanese word, called shibumi. Hmm. And it sort of describes contentment with, I can't even find the words for it. It's like, for example, a walk through a sun-dappled forest, mm-hmm. and you're totally at your ease. Mm-hmm. That's, and you're connected in some way.
Connected, I think, is a good word.
And that's
word.
Shibumi. I just love shibumi. That word, yeah.
I'm going to get that for the other wrist. Shibumi and Lobasham. Yeah, I'm going to get the tattoo on the throat. Yes. I love the throat tattoo. Shibumi. And people are, and then I'm going to finally meet someone, a Japanese person's going to say, no, they wrote it wrong. Yes, no. Hey, Liam, God bless you. Thank you for being here. Just an absolute treat. And let's hang again sometime. Let's do that. That'd be fun.
Thank you, man.
We'll take me to a boxing match.
Yeah.
And I can say, why are those men fighting?
It might have been Mike Tyson. Do you remember where it was?
It wasn't Tyson. I do remember what it was. I'll think of it. We should look it up. But it was, the fight was over very quickly. I think it was Floyd Mayweather. It was because it was a very quick fight.
In the Garden?
I think it was in the Garden. Okay. I know it was in the Garden. And okay. I think it was it might have been Floyd Mayweather.
Do you remember the year?
I remember the year. Roughly? No, we had Guinness. I don't remember a goddamn thing. I remember there was Guinness. And what I remember is Liam Neeson and the Guinness made more of an impression on me than the fight. The fight was very quick. We watched an undercard that was quick, and then the main fight was quick. And all I really appreciated and enjoyed was my time with Liam.
I'm going to have to look that up too, mate.
Yeah.
For the record, it says Floyd never fought at the Garden.
He didn't.
No,
he wasn't in the ring. He was fighting with someone. he ordered nachos and they brought him a pizza. So I don't remember. Stop quizzing me and getting online and looking for things. No. You know, I don't even know if a fight was happening. It might have been my family arguing. I don't know. But I know that definitely we hung out there, and we hung out there with Frank Smiley and his wife, and it was who worked for me, and we had a wonderful time. She's also, I believe, from the North, and I think I know that because you two got into an argument within seconds.
Is she a person?
Yeah, she is, I think, yeah.
I would explain
it. You were arguing right away, and I had to break it up. Liam, have an amazing day. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Colin. Thank you so much.
Okay, it's time to find out what's going on with the young people in America.
Oh, is that why I'm here?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why you're here.
Get ready for a youth quake.
I want to find out because, listen, this summer, it's been all about Taylor Swift, or as I call her, T. Swift, or T.S., or sometimes T.S. Eliot, because
that's odd.
She's been so successful, she's left a wasteland behind her. Kids, you got to learn something.
Okay.
My point is that I brought in the biggest Taylor Swift fan I know, and he's David Hopping. He's my real assistant now that Sona's just become a professional goofball 24/7.
Oh, okay.
Well, come on. I mean, you still are. You're
a professional goofball 24/7. Wouldn't you say that?
Okay, sure. I guess, yeah. I guess you are.
I don't,
so you are.
Why
yes, you are.
Why do you do that?
What do I do? What?
You do, when you're like, I guess, when you say something to
that
me.
That was a really good
Nicolas
Cage. That was fantastic. Anyway, let's stick to the point.
Yes.
And it's not you. Let me tell you something.
No.
David Hopping's here. And David Hopping, you actually went, you're the only one in this room that went to the Taylor Swift concert.
I did.
And everyone's talking about it. So this is, you know, I don't think anyone else who's seen the Taylor Swift shows this summer has actually been recorded giving their thoughts on it. So this is a real scoop.
Yeah. And he's been multiple times.
How many times have you gone?
Twice.
Okay.
$30,000?
Yeah.
Well,
how much was it?
You don't let the system work you. You have to work the system.
David, so what does that mean?
David, what?
It means he came in through the
codes.
Oh, okay.
It means he came in through the air conditioning duct. A lot of people were saying, I love the part of the concert where that white Midwestern guy falls through the ceiling.
They know you're Midwestern.
Covered in lint and hits the floor really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, was it amazing? It's a 7-hour concert, is that right?
She does like 3.5 hours just herself.
And her opening act is they show Dr. Zhivago, which is a 3-hour movie.
I was out until you said that.
Yeah. And then
now you're in.
Yeah.
Right. They show Dr. Zhivago, then they build an Aztec temple.
Wow.
In real time, and then she comes out. So the whole thing, you're in for 15,
there.
You're 18 hours in, okay? Uh-huh. So how was it?
The best night.
Best night of your life.
My life, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wait, you've had dinner at my house.
I have.
Still the best night of your life?
Is that just a statement? Yeah.
Okay. I had burritos. You love burritos.
Oh, I love burritos.
Anyway, so it was incredible, yes?
Yeah.
Everyone says she gives a fantastic show.
I don't know
show.
How she does it. I was exhausted. I felt like I was hungover the next day. I'd had no alcohol.
Okay. Is it possible that there's more than one, that she has other people come out? Well, first of all, she's performing in a huge space.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a bunch of times where she says, before my next song, I'll be right back. And she ducks behind, right? Something.
Like a Texas curtain. Switch.
Yeah. And it's possible that they pull the old, thank you, Texas Switch. And she comes out, and it's an easy look to replicate. Is that possible that there are 9
question.
People backstage?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Mm.
Oh, there are cameras that get
and
in
like
close.
Her face is just on the.
But
big
what
screen.
If that's pre-recorded
yes,
video?
Pre-recorded video.
And there's a stand-in live because no one's close enough,
you know,
except for people that pay like $30,000, and that's the Illuminati anyway. So they're going to keep this secret.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I think it's very highly possible that it is like 7 different people who can look like Taylor Swift. They show pre-recorded stuff on the big screens. People don't know. It's playing to a track. I heard TMZ has footage of her backstage eating a giant bowl of mushed corn. And just corn mash.
Smoking a giant cigar.
Yeah, smoking a giant cigar. And she's on the tape saying, suckers. And she's eating it off of a giant table that's made of $1 million bills.
Yeah.
That's a tape that I heard TMZ has, but they're just slow to get it out. They got some editing problems. Because you know how slow they can be.
They're
with
so
kidding.
Slow with their with how they get their news out.
Yeah.
Can I confess something?
Yeah.
I can't name a single Taylor Swift song.
What are you
not
talking
a
about?
Not
one?
A single
one.
Yeah, you can.
Today's the day. Here
not
we go.
A single one.
Off on our way.
Okay, so Conan can't either.
No, I'm just naming them. I'm ripping them off. They're incredible. They're rolling off my tongue.
Keep going.
Who are you
going
to be?
Mm-hmm.
He was my current, but now he's my ex.
Oh.
He's in my rear view window. Don't need him no more.
Some of these actually sound like they could be.
I was going to say, and also a lot of her songs are just like a word that we use regularly.
I love her song, the acoustic ballad, Fuck You, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh.
She's got some great tunes.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? What's the matter? You don't like this segment?
I love it.
Okay. You're getting all nervous and stuff.
I'm always nervous.
What made it so standout? Like, what do you see at a Taylor Swift concert that you don't see elsewhere?
The one I went to, she announced 1989 Taylor's version.
And she's re-recording that because someone else owns that album,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It's weird. I know stuff about her, but I couldn't tell you a song.
So wait a minute.
Whole night.
That's a whole idea I just had. We'll get to Taylor Swift in a second. Yeah. Guys, this is ingenious. Okay, so
we re-record
every podcast word for word.
God.
And we sell them. We sell them on television late at night on a 1-800 or a 555 number. And it's called Conan, the real Conan, 1963, when I was born.
This is good.
And we sell them and we get to keep all that cash.
Yeah, I'm in.
And then we disparage these other ones because they're not real. They're owned by the man.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that? Do you guys want to do that? Because I don't.
I'm busy.
No. Yeah, I don't want to do it.
No, I'm really, really busy. Yeah. I don't have time.
I'm free.
Your friend, okay. Why don't you do, hey, David, why don't you do all parts? You'd be me, Sona, Gorley.
From seat to seat.
Yeah, including whatever interview we're
in. I have a wig here. Yeah.
So anyway, keep going. So Taylor Swift.
Oh, no. So she announced 1989. So the whole night she kept wearing like new blue dresses because that's the color that represents 1989.
Of course. Why? Why does blue represent 1989?
It just does.
Culturally or by, or her, she decided.
So when the
Democrats. It just kind of became, all of her albums have a color associated with
it. So David, when the Democrats are winning in a landslide, that means that that's Taylor Swift?
Yeah. Right.
That's covering the map? What? Beating the red?
Well, only 1989.
I just don't understand why blue means Taylor Swift 1989.
It's just, I don't know where it came from. I think the fans just made it into
that's
a
such
thing.
A major color. You can't claim a whole major color for one album. That's,
she's not saying no one else can use blue.
It's just what represents it.
She's just saying, hey, 1989 was my blue phase. And then red, I'm guessing, was her red phase.
You know, speak now purple.
Yeah. Okay. What about Midnights? Black?
Yeah. No, Reputation's black.
Oh, right. Right.
Who? What's your favorite Taylor Swift song?
Oh, God. Long Live.
Mine's Long Lives.
That was good.
Oh, thanks.
And what's your other one?
All Too Well.
All Too Well.
The 10-minute version.
Yeah, 10-minute version.
Yeah.
I like there's an 11-minute version I like because you just hear her coughing and saying, did we get it? You think we got it?
Where's my bowl of corn?
Yeah.
My mush corn.
We got, can I have my corn mush now? What else do you like?
I mean, the whole Midnights album.
Yeah, well,
I
that's, mean, every don't album. Even get started.
Folklore Evermore.
Yeah, Folklore is Evermore. And...
She's not the first artist to have to re-record a full album because she didn't own it.
No, I know JoJo did.
Def Leppard.
Right.
No, they re-recorded
JoJo?
It because
really?
You know, like
they
forgot.
Yeah.
Didn't they lose the master recordings? That's why they re-recorded it?
No, someone wouldn't allow them to go digital with it. And so they re-recorded it note for note, exactly the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so you're, why Rain on Swifties Parade?
I'm not ranting. I'm just
saying. You are. You're like, they weren't, she wasn't the first. I think it's amazing what she did.
Are you a leopard head? Yeah. You are?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm cool.
Right. Yeah. Def Leppard.
Because I know how to rock and I like metal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pour some glucose on me.
That's White Snake. Isn't
no.
it?
No, that's the old
pour
DL.
Some sugar. Oh, it is DL. What am I thinking of?
I don't know. What are you thinking of? You're so
here
wrong.
I go again on
yeah, they're
my
the same
own.
Song.
Yeah, it is the same song. That's right.
Well,
I was thinking
all rock
White
songs
Snake.
Are pretty much the same.
I think Taylor Swift should record Def Leppard songs and White Snake
now
songs.
Now we're talking.
That's next project.
Oh, she should also record famous news broadcasts.
Yes.
Oh, the Hindenburg is coming into Lakehurst, New Jersey. And oh my God, the humanity!
Why
the humanity!
One? How about cheerful
How about
ones?
The
there
work?
Aren't cheerful news. When does someone break into the news and go, now something cheerful? A bluebird had a baby.
Oh, okay.
No one does that. It's
Come
always
on.
Something bad.
You don't know, hey. You
Moon
know,
landing.
Guys, the war is over.
Yeah, there you
we
go.
We did it.
Oh, we killed everyone, died for nothing.
Oh,
no, telling you. All right, I got to wrap this up. David, I'm glad you had a good time.
Yes.
And I am happy for all the Swifties out there. My daughter's a huge Taylor Swift fan, and she went to the show and lost her mind, and it made her so happy that I was indebted. I was indebted to Taylor Swift. Seriously, I'm just, it's nice to see someone putting out so much positivity.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's,
all
that
joking.
Seems true. Yeah.
No, seriously,
yeah,
all joking aside, I'm hugely happy for her. And just, I think it's, I don't know, we've had just so much bad news for such a long time that when people are all excited about the Barbie movie or Taylor Swift and
Beyonce.
Or Beyonce.
Yeah. The ladies are doing
ladies
it.
Ladies are doing
summer.
It. Go, cool. go, ladies, go. Because you seem to know what you're doing. We do not.
Yeah.
Us fellas. All right.
Well, I'm a lady.
Well.
Okay.
Sort of
are
a,
you a...
Well, okay.
But I'm just like,
I'm more of a broad. I guess I'm more of a broad.
You're a broad. You're a broad. What a broad.
You're
yes,
broad.
You're a tough broad. Sona was a bouncer for 4 years at a club.
I'd be a
hey,
good bouncer.
Hey, get the fuck
you
out of
would
here.
Be a good bouncer.
You would be a great bouncer.
Yeah. But
you'd
I'd
be
also, a great I'd be nice. People, I'd have a lot of regulars.
That's true.
Because I'm cool, too.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm a cool metal guy.
Don't say I'm a cool metal guy.
I haven't seen you at the meetings.
Because metal guys don't say, hey, guys, I'm a cool metal guy.
Guys, I'm going to be responsible. We had a better ending, and then we kept going. Yeah. And then when he said, I'm a cool metal guy, there was just diarrhea on the wall. So I'm ending it. Peace out, Tupac.
Oh, cool rap guy.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Ovsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Nick Liao, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.